Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Thursday edition, and it is a beautiful day. As Kim said, the wind chills now are, well, they're less than 15 below, so we've got that to celebrate, and the temperatures will warm up just in time for the heavy snow coming this weekend. It's days like this that make me so happy I don't live in Northern California. Roger Chang is on the phone line from CNET. Roger, how are things in California today?
I wouldn't know. I'm actually in New York.
Oh, aren't you usually in California?
Nope, I'm based in New York.
I'm sorry. I apologize. And that whole introduction, we're just going to have to cut this and do it over again, I think. If you're in New York, I want to touch on a couple of things. Maybe that big tech meeting that happened in Trump Tower yesterday. But let's start with Yahoo and this revelation that a billion people were hacked. And now it looks as if maybe Verizon's takeover of Yahoo might be at risk. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, the latest, as you said, more than a billion accounts have been affected. That includes stolen data, including names, email addresses, telephone numbers, birthdays, and encrypted passwords. So pretty much all information. And because this happened in 2013, there's no real recourse for this. You've already lost your information.
Well, and so that's what I'm wondering, right? So if you are going to have been harmed by this, you would have been harmed already.
Not necessarily. I mean, this is a pool of a billion user information, so it takes a while to kind of scan
right
through that. Like, maybe, granted, you know, unless you're a real high profile celebrity, that's who they're really going after, right? High profile celebrities, public figures, matching those passwords up to other accounts. Although to your original point, chances are if you haven't been hit yet, you probably are okay.
And why is it that Yahoo, is it that they're just telling us now or that they've just learned of it now? And if they just learned, why did it take so long?
So it's a comedy of errors. It basically stemmed back from a report of a hack over the summer. Yahoo investigated it, found that was a hoax, but then realized it had been hacked in a separate incident that lost 500 million accounts. And further investigating that hack, they found this separate one just recently. So they keep digging through, and they're finding more and more skeletons.
So is that typical? I mean, or is Yahoo just very badly run? I mean, is it possible that, you know, my information or your information has been hacked at other outlets, and the other outlets aren't even aware of it yet?
It's possible. I wouldn't rule anything out. But this is a highly unusual situation in which they keep looking further, digging deeper into Yahoo's history, and finding more and more of these hacks that are getting worse and worse. They're progressively worse. We're at a billion. Yahoo is now the victim of the two largest hacks in history. Half a billion and a full billion.
They got that going for them. And Marissa Mayer, I think, came in after these hacks, but she was the one dressing it all up for the takeover. What's up with Verizon now, and what's up with Marissa?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is obviously a black eye for Marissa. She actually came in in 2012.
Oh, she did. Okay.
Before this hack. And this is definitely a black eye for her. You know, Verizon has sort of maintained the statement that they're waiting for Yahoo to wrap up this investigation before they make a call. But there are reports out now that Verizon is considering scrapping its deal to buy Yahoo. And it makes a lot of sense, right? At this point, Yahoo is synonymous with losing your personal information. And for a company like Verizon, which has a fairly sterling reputation when it comes to customer service and security, to inherit that kind of brand just seems like
would not be so good.
Just a bad idea.
All right, let's go to New York now and Trump Tower. Donald Trump, the president-elect, met with pretty much all of the A-listers when it comes to the tech world. I think the CEO, Dorsey of Twitter, was not there famously, but most others were. And here's the thing that strikes me about Donald Trump, Roger. Right now we're in this period where nothing's really happening. You know, he's not president yet. He's just talking. And so everyone's sort of filling in their own blanks of what they expect with him. For example, Al Gore comes down the elevator and says, "We had a great talk. I'm thinking of great things." And then the next day, the president-elect nominates an EPA administrator who the tree huggers just can't stand. Okay, so you've got that. He talks yesterday to these tech leaders about how they're the innovation leaders and they're huge in business and I'm going to do whatever I can to help you. We'll see if that happens, but what came out of the meeting from where you stood?
I mean, I think it's a lot of that. It was really Trump trying to reset the relationship with technology, right? During the election, he panned Apple, he panned Google, really went after them for you know, employing people outside of the U.S., you know, expressing philosophical beliefs on immigration that may not, you know, rub some of those executives
sure.
the right way, considering that some of them are immigrants themselves.
Well, and the tech world depends a lot on highly educated immigration, right?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of philosophical differences between the two sides, but as you said, Trump sort of reached out, extended the olive branch, really tried to get the tech industry on its side. We haven't heard too much from the various executives. I think Jeff Bezos from Amazon said it was a productive meeting, but we haven't gotten a lot of details, so it's still kind of unclear what was said and if there was anything really definitive that was hashed out.
Right, and you know, we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong, but it just seems so far that Donald Trump has not been willing to have someone in a room and say, hey, you're screwed under me. You know, I'm not going to do this, or we're going to make changes this way. He seems to be telling everyone who goes up there kind of what they want to hear. And that's clearly not going to be the case when he's president. He's going to have to make decisions that are going to make people angry. So I'm not putting too much stock in these meetings just yet.
Yeah, he's the consummate deal maker, right? He's telling people what they want to hear. And yeah, eventually that's going to catch up to him. But for now, like you said, we're in this transition period where he doesn't really have to commit to anything.
And he promised to do things differently, and he certainly is doing that, so it's going to be interesting to watch. Roger Chang in New York, not California. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's check the traffic hotspots. I know Metro is having trouble earlier. I think those are behind them, hopefully, but we've got Jill Egan now watching all of that. Jill, where do we stand? It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for listening, and I want to take this time during the holidays to say that you all are very important to me, and I'm really grateful that you do tune in. And I just wanted to say thanks for that, and I appreciate it. Okay, Elise, how was that as holiday marketing?
That was very nice, except you didn't mention the name of your company or the name of the station or anything else.
All right, let me try again. Thanks very much for listening. Hey, I just want to say I really appreciate the fact that you all listen to the Business Lunch here on WGN and maybe support Steve Bertrand, travel.com. Really means a lot to me during these holiday season times to look to you and to consider you a friend. Okay, how was that?
I would say 100% better.
Thank you very much. And I didn't spend anything. I just spent WGN's dime.
Well, you know, sometimes the very best way to say thank you is to actually say it rather than even sending something.
Okay. But the other side of that, and here's Elise Glink, who is on the phone line to talk to us about marketing. So, let me just introduce you. Frequent contributor to WGN, the co-host of the Monday Morning Podcast with John Byrne. We talk about that a lot. Also, the CEO of Best Money Moves. Okay, so there was my introduction. Elise is here. The other side of it, though, to me is like, to me, if I'm the recipient of that, thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. But if I'm out there as a listener hearing some guy talk to them like that, I feel like it's a kind of a phony suck-up thing to get money out of them.
Wow.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but I think that being appreciative of your customers and your clients, your employees, your vendors, being appreciative, we think about it more this time of year, but I think people are in this hectic and busy world we live in, people like being recognized. And for employees, that recognition might take the form of a bonus. We just did all of our reviews and bonuses for Best Money Moves. And people did a great job for us, and we said thank you, and we gave them a bonus. But for our customers and our clients and our vendors, we also sent different kinds of things to them to say thank you, because you have to think about what the point is of actually doing that this time of year, and it's different things. Like for listening at WGN, that's one thing, but maybe your goal is sales this year or next year. Maybe you want to establish a business relationship or further one. And so figuring out what the goal is helps drive whatever holiday marketing or holiday interactions you have.
I'll try a third time because I'm not really expressing myself very clearly, but I guess it's been a wild week. I guess what I'm trying to get at, though, is there must be a balance between offering sincere thanks and appreciation, which I do have and I hope that I do on the air, and then going beyond that and sort of being a little too smarmy to where it can really be a turnoff to your clients.
It can, and I think that, you know, you and I talk about authenticity, I don't know, at least a dozen times a year when I come on your show, to talk about marketing. And I think that everybody has such a high, bias now towards things that feel authentic. So, for example, today I'm actually calling you from Lincoln, Illinois. We're meeting with a Best Money Moves business partner, or company I hope we'll be partners with. And I brought them a very special treat that you can only get in Northbrook, Illinois, and it's coffee cakes from Leonard's, which I've actually brought to WGN once or twice. And when I was on TV, I used to bring it to WGN TV, and everybody loved it. And I love to feed people, as my friends know, and I'm big on food gifts. That's something that I do. And I thought, is there a better way to introduce myself to this company, but to bring something that I love and have a whole bunch of personal stories about that will be memorable for them? I didn't spend very much on it. It wasn't an expensive gift, but it's a gift from the heart. It's a very authentic expression of me.
I think authentic is key.
Marketing, it's important to do that.
All right. So real quick, then, I agree with you. I think authenticity is probably the key thing to all of this. But okay, so it's I got us off track, and I apologize for that. But your marketing at the end of the year, decide what your message is, and then you say decide on the budget. Isn't the message sometimes dictated by the budget?
I think that messaging is very different from budget, because I think you can say anything you want to say for almost any amount of price point. You can design a digital card and make a donation to charity, or you can take your best client out to the Everest Room, for example, and just, and spend a bundle.
Sure.
So I think that how you say thank you, how you do that, what you're saying in that message, I talk about that with you all the time, too. It's a super important thing, and I want it to be very consistent and authentic to your brand.
That is Elise Glink. Check out her blog at thinkglink.com. Thanks very much for joining us today, Elise. I appreciate it.
Happy holidays, Steve.
You bet. Happy holidays. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:37 on the Wintrust Business Lunch, especially a Wintrust Business Lunch today. Jim Kiley, the managing director of Wintrust, is in the studio along with Father Steve Katsouras, who is the director, the CEO of Arupe College. Gentlemen, both of you, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Father Steve, how did I do on that name?
Terrific, yeah.
That's not
I
true.
I was 14 before I could spell it, so you're ahead of me.
Tell me about Arupe and how it got started and where you are now.
Sure. So this is part of the Jesuit story of education in the last 40 years. In the 70s, some Jesuits, and really mostly lay people, began a middle school on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And that was the first nativity model school, a middle school for kids from low-income backgrounds. There are over 50 of them now in the United States, including a Chicago Jesuit Academy here. So that was middle school. Then in the 90s, in Pilsen, here in Chicago, Cristo Rey Jesuit High School opened, again making a Jesuit high school experience available to great kids who otherwise would not experience it. So you can see where the story
sure,
is going.
Right.
Now it's time for higher ed to catch on. So a couple of years ago, then president of Loyola University, Father Mike Garanzini, another Jesuit, was talking to presidents and principals and administrators of Chicago's public, Catholic, and charter high school, saying, would there be, an interest for young people from low-income backgrounds who could not afford a Jesuit tuition to go to a school like Arupe College, a college within Loyola University? And they said, are you kidding? Of course.
And so you started a year ago August.
So we began a year ago August. That's
uh-huh.
right.
And it's a two-year, it's a junior college system, essentially.
Yeah, so we, the plan here is to give these students an experience of a Jesuit education where they get an associate's degree from a college within Loyola. They're taking the same classes that their classmates at Loyola are taking. So it's the core curriculum, including theology and philosophy. And then after they get the associate's degree, debt-free, by the way. That is critical.
Right.
We're addressing the student debt issue. That is, of course, a national issue. They get this degree, and then they go on to the next best chapter of their lives.
How many did you start with a year ago, August?
So we began with 159, and we're at 131. Our retention rate is 82%, which I think, you know, after Pope Francis, is the best Catholic story of the year.
It's a difficult audience to keep, right? I mean, it's a difficult demographic to keep in college.
So our students...
These kids are doing, they're doing full-time lives outside of
yes,
this.
Yes, yeah, they're extraordinary, you know. But we have kids who are dealing with our city's gun and gang violence. They're dealing with housing and food insecurities, immigration issues. Some of our students are parents. They're all commuters. And yet, I am so impressed by their resilience and their perseverance. They see this as a great pathway to their futures.
So these are young kids who want to go on to school. Their grades and their scores aren't good enough to maybe qualify them for grants and scholarships. You take that sort of the people in that donut and give them a chance they wouldn't have because they couldn't afford it otherwise.
And we have a lot of great wraparound services. So first of all, our faculty members all serve as advisors. And that oftentimes that piece doesn't happen effectively at other community college settings. The advising, we're very intrusive at Arufe. And which is, we think, a benefit for the students, and I think they would agree with us. We also have a career coordinator that helps our students find part-time jobs. We shared the building at Loyola University with the School of Social Work, so we have social workers working with our students if that's a need for some of them.
And the goal is they won't ever pay more than $1,000 a year the education.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then that money has to come from somewhere.
Right.
Is that why Kylie's in the studio? Jim Kiley from Wintrust, come up to the microphone a little bit.
Thanks,
because man. Part of this then, I mean, I got in a note that, you know, the students are there. It's not hard to find students who need the help. What Arupe needs is funding to help subsidize those students, correct?
That's exactly right.
So how do people do that?
Well, I think that Father Steve's doing a spectacular job of meeting people throughout the community who are willing to step up and try to help all they can. Wintrust is there because, as you know, we're a conglomeration of community banks from all over all around the city, and this problem is our problem.
Right.
And so all we can do to help Arupe is what we're going
to
do.
What is it that, you know, and I want to talk to you about this, Father Steve, but, you know, Jim, watching it from a little bit further of a distance, what is it that energizes you most about what's happening at Arupe?
Well, Father Steve and I have had this conversation several times. You look around the city and the spectacular amount of violence that's going on and things we have no control over except to try to get kids in education. And what Father Steve is doing is reaching to a population that is exactly what we're speaking to.
You talked about Father Steve being invasive. I read in an article, maybe it was in CNN or somewhere, that about you had a student who was homeless. Who you found a home for, right?
Oh, sure.
How much of the work is that?
A lot of it. And, of course, you know, homelessness is never scheduled, so sometimes that happens at, you know, very unpredictable times. A Mercy Home here in Chicago and Father Scott Donahue, they've been wonderful partners for us in terms of finding placements for students who need homes.
I mentioned, too, before you came in that this was the first, but for just... doing a little Google, doing a little searching, it looks like others are already emulating it.
Yeah, so St. Thomas University, Catholic but not Jesuit, we pray for them. they have announced that they're starting.
Everyone who's Jesuit educated laughed at that, but a lot of people missed it. But
they've announced that they're going to initiate one of these in Minneapolis in the fall of 2017. I've had conversations with many other presidents and other leaders in Jesuit post-secondary ed institutions, and as a matter of fact, I'm speaking to a number of them next month in D.C. about, we really think, like those nativity schools for middle schoolers, or like Cristo Rey for the high schoolers, this could be replicated around the country, working with similar populations in other urban areas.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, we're kind of talking on the business lunch this week going into Christmas about, and with different charities and different groups that people can help and get involved with. So is there a website, Jim, or a phone number or something that people want to help or what they can do?
I think Father's got the website.
Sure. So listen, contact us at, well, contact me, but certainly contact, look at Google Arupe College, A-R-R-U-P-E. Or you can go on the Loyola's website, which is luc.edu. And listen, many needs from helping our students. We cover all of their expenses for their orientation. We provide breakfast and lunch for every student every day. All of our freshmen get laptop computers. All of our sophomores have opportunities of making college tours, things that a lot of parents do with their high school age children that our parents, for lots of different reasons, just can't do. So these are some of the giving opportunities that we have. Also, we have a number of undocumented students who don't qualify for federal and state aid. And so, and that's really our business model.
Right.
You know, our kids all qualify for Pell Grants and for MAP Grants, except for these immigrants who are often our strongest students. They're on the dean's list.
And it's facing so much uncertainty. It must be nice to be able to count on something, you know, to go to the school and to see guys like you every day.
It's a real anchor for the students. But also, to be honest with you, these students are influencing the conversation of higher ed in the city and beyond. And we Jesuits have always been interested in education because we want to influence those who will influence others. And we believe that our students right now will be influencing the trajectory of post-secondary ed through their experiences and their successes.
Rupe College. Look it up, Father Steve. Thanks very much for coming in.
Okay, thanks
Steve
very
Colley,
much.
Great to, Jim Colley, I'm sorry. Thanks very much as well.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tomorrow on the program, Wayne Larrivee, who is the voice of the Green Bay Packers, will be here. And, you know, Wayne and I worked together more than 20 years ago when he was working at WGN, voice of the Bears. And I learned a lot from him, listening to them call the games, and even during the commercial breaks, the spot breaks. He would talk about leadership on the field. I remember a story he told about Reggie White in particular. And so I ran into Wayne over the summer and I said, look, I want to have you on one day to talk about that and to see how that applies to business. Well, lo and behold, Bears are playing the Packers this Sunday. And Wayne actually has a book out. You should Google Larrivee. He's got a book out on some great Packer memories. So we'll talk a little bit about the book, but I want to talk about leadership on the field and how that translates to maybe leadership in the boardroom. So that's tomorrow on the Business Lunch. Today we're looking at a couple of charities. I was out with dinner with some friends a week or so ago, and they were telling me about Cradles to Crayons, a charity that's making, I think, a renewed or new push in the city of Chicago. And then lo and behold, I come into the office and I hear from the Cradles to Crayons. And Bernard Cherkasov is the executive director of Chicago Cradles to Crayons. He joins us now on a phone line. Bernard, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good afternoon, Steve. It's great to be with you.
I'm glad you're here. And, you know, we talked last segment about a charity, the Jesuits, who are helping college-age kids in need. You're a little younger than that, right? You're like birth to 12.
That's right. We help children from birth to age 12 who are living in poverty or homeless situations.
And so what is it that you do for them?
So every child deserves to play, learn, and grow without worrying about staying warm through the winter. So this winter, for example, we're making sure that the kids we serve have a warm coat to winter, to wear, snow boots to play outside with, and that they have clothing to wear to school, to play in the playground. In addition to that, we also give children books to read, developmentally appropriate toys to play with, and we serve kids year-round so that we don't just give them clothing in the winter. We also make sure that they have seasonally appropriate clothing throughout the year.
You've begun this push, Gear Up for Winter, right? And, well, we're in winter now, so hopefully these kids who need coats have them, but I would imagine you're still collecting them. Is this the sort of thing, are you looking for people to bring in big collections, or, you know, can I empty out my closet and drop it off, or how does that work?
So, absolutely. We love when families empty out their closets and then bring to us previously loved items that they no longer need, but that other kids in the Chicago area will absolutely love to have. I have a 7-year-old, and I know how quickly she grows out of clothes.
Yeah.
You know, clothes that she would have worn just in October and November are a little bit tight for her now. And so that kind of, those kind of articles of clothing, shoes, we absolutely take. And folks can bring out, you know, bring stuff to our giving factory in Logan Square, or they can look up online at cradlestocrayons.org, one of about a couple of dozen other drop-off points where they can drop off their stuff.
I tell you, you know, my kids are older now, they're in college, but one site that I'll never forget from their elementary and middle school years was in the winter to Just take a look at the lost and found in the school district where I lived. And there were mounds of high-end coats and gloves and hats that, you know, kids and families might have lost but didn't miss so much that they went out and bought new ones. There's all this stuff. So if you think that you don't have something to give, you probably do. And this is the time to do it. So, again, the website Cradles to Crayons. People can find more information there, Bernard.
That's right, cradletocrayons.org. And you just mentioned Lost and Found as a perfect example. You know, we had a couple of camps this summer who gave us clothing from their Lost and Found. It'll be perfect next spring for the kids we serve.
I mean, you know, it was almost an embarrassment of riches sometimes. But look, this is a business show. And we've been talking to quite a number of charities this week. This is a big charitable time. How do you approach it? Because clearly you want people to give and to contribute to your organization, but it's hard to compete with other organizations doing well, right? How do you balance that?
So we don't see ourselves as competing. We see ourselves as adding to the solutions that to the many challenges our community is facing. So what we do is we provide opportunities for companies not just to do collection drives, but also come in here with their teams to volunteer at the Giving Factory. They can help us inspect items for quality. They can help us create outfit packs, clean up some toys, making sure that the mini libraries that we're creating for kids are age appropriate, for the reading levels and fits for the kids. So there are many opportunities for families to come in together across generations and teach kids the values of loving kindness and service. And you're not just putting previously loved products to good use, but you also are teaching your children good values and building relationships with your colleagues and clients if you're in the business world. So there's something for everyone here.
Well, there is a buzz out there about you, Bernard. Thanks very much for joining us. Bernard Cherkasov is the executive director of Chicago Cradles to Crayons. Nice to talk to you. Good luck this year.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You bet.
Thanks so much.